I haven't done anything with a guest in a while. My voice is gone.
We're both sick.
We both sound terrible. We both will not be singing on this episode. I guess I don't need to tell you that we begin with the dreaded, wonderful poem.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the
worst.
I was going to say one of the better ones we've had in a while. Even though it doesn't make any sense and doesn't
scan.
But why don't you go ahead and give us your beautiful rendition of it?
Some cubs are helpful. Some cubs are not. Show them the way and they may take a shot.
That scans more or less.
It even rhymes. It's just
they may take a shot. Right. It just seems it's the last thing written right before it goes off to press. I have to believe. This wasn't a book series that was inspired by a bunch of poems. They didn't like write a bunch of,
but they don't have to. Why did they start doing them? Add anything.
Because I think the first few, in the very beginning of the series, I think they work. And then like, well, it's part of the format now.
The little picture surrounding it is cute.
It is. What are you going to put in the middle of it if not for a rhyming poem?
It could have been the title.
That's true. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and a happy new year, everyone. It's a new year with a new number on the end of it and a new voice for your host because I have a cold and I've had a cold for a couple of weeks now. Thank you for bearing with through the last week that I took off. It was fun, but I am happy to be back in studio with a guest for this wonderful book. And who better to kick off the new year, then the love of my life, Alana is back to discuss the Berenstain Bears Lend a Helping Hand from 1998. This used to be a first-time book, and now it is one of the Berenstain Bears classics. So if you go looking for it, it is no longer called a first-time book. It's called a Berenstain Bears classic because that's what these are. And I am looking at the most classic person in my life. That doesn't make any sense. I don't know what that means. Hi, welcome to the show, Alana. Welcome back.
Thank you. Ours must be old because it says first time books on the cover.
Yeah, that's like an original copy of it.
Ooh.
If you buy it now, they've rebranded it. It probably comes with stickers of old people in attics, I guess.
Or a sticker that says Half Price Books, $1.63.
I did buy it at Half Price Books once. Not for $1.63 because I probably worked there at the time. So it was probably 50% off that. I got this book dirt cheap. It was a real attic find. So the Berenstain Bears Lend a Helping Hand. I invited you to talk about this show, not only because I wanted to start off the year with you by my side, but also because this book deals specifically with people helping out seniors in their community. And without getting too much into detail, if you don't want to, I just wanted to let the audience know like what your experience with that may be.
Sure. For the first hunk of my work life, I worked in programs, nonprofits that helped seniors live in their homes. So let's see. The first one was a place that did mostly like visiting and social support for people who didn't have family or friends nearby. And then the second one was called a chore and home maintenance programs that would like help people out with like snow shoveling and raking and little fix-it jobs. And then the third one kind of did basically anything people would need to live independently in their homes.
And while you no longer work for those organizations, it's still something that you find very important. Like you have very strong feelings about and well-informed opinions about.
I do. Well, and actually, if all goes well, I'm about to join the board of a foundation that helps fund programs for seniors.
Top notch.
I know.
So you understand that this is not only an important aspect of any community is, you know, how well the seniors are doing, but also I find it's kind of an unusual. So far in this book series, the most contact we've had with senior citizens is are they or are they not a witch?
Or are they or are they not your babysitter?
Right, right. And so this is like Ms. McGriz in this book is an old woman living alone. Her husband has died. We hear a little bit about that. And she seems to be relatively I wouldn't say isolated, but she doesn't seem to have a huge support group behind her. Like, I would assume that her family is not in the picture, if she even has family.
Perhaps, but some of the things I notice are that she's out doing her grocery shopping on her own in the beginning of the book, and she got there, I forget, she was taking the bus, is that right? Yeah, she's taking the bus. So actually, she uses a cane, which is awesome, because I know a lot of seniors who don't like to be seen out in public with their cane, and so some people, or walker, so some people choose to stay home, which tends to start a cycle of getting more frail and more isolated. So I actually think she's a pretty great role model. She's using public transit, she's, for whatever reason, not driving, and some people choose to drive when they shouldn't drive, and then that's not safe, so that's awesome. So she's made the decision that the right transport for her is to use public transportation, which also shows her community has viable public transit system, which I would not actually expect given everything else they've said about Bear Country, but you know, whatever, go Metro Bear Transit. She goes out in public with her cane. She chats people up. She knows her neighbors. So I actually think she might be relatively well connected. Also, the project she asks for help with isn't like just a I'm barely getting by project. Mm. It's like a I'm trying to take care of a backlog of things project.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I think actually the more successful folks tend to have a pretty wide circle of people they draw on. So the fact that she's asking the neighbor kids for help with the type of project that's not like I can't get my laundry done, but that's something I have to solve every week. This is more just like, This is a one in every 5 years type of a project.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the beginning and see where this all comes from. Because it doesn't start with Ms. McGriz. It starts with kind of a universal problem in the Bear household.
I liked the way it started. The very beginning says, Mama and Papa Bear were like most parents. They wanted the best for their cubs. Brother and sister were like most cubs. They wanted the best for themselves.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really... almost sneaky way to start this book, because I think that's so true. I think parents want the best for their kids in general, and then those kids, the parents think, are going to interpret that as, see, we're teaching you to be like thoughtful of others. The kids, their worldview is, oh, that means I am supposed to get the best of everything.
Yes.
And so then there's a series of the brother, so also showing brother and sister being competitive and fighting about it too. Like, I want the biggest piece of cake. No, I want the biggest piece of cake. I want the best spot in front of the TV. No, I'm going to get it, you know. So,
yeah, and it's reflective of that generational thing where, like, Mama and Papa, particularly Papa, has always been portrayed as having grown up without the luxuries of life. He grew up very rural, and like they always like, hey, we didn't even have TV growing up. So the parents kind of want to compensate for that by like, well, my kids are never going to want for anything. I mean, I remember that's how I grew up. My parents were always just like, we don't want you to have to.
It's the upwardly mobile trap.
Right, yeah. Right. And I mean, because, you know, I would say that the Mama and Papa sort of represent the generation that's like probably like our parents, though, that generation. And it is that delicate balance where, like, how do you keep your children comfortable,
grounded,
but also, but also grounded.
Well, so then Mom and Papa are in bed and Mama's worrying about this and Papa starts asking her about it. And she says, you know, we have to teach brother and sister how to be less selfish. Do you have any ideas? And then he's already fallen asleep.
And not to pull back the curtain too much on our lives, but I can totally relate to that page. I know exactly what happens in that situation. Papa does care. He really does care. But he practices good sleep hygiene and knows that laying in bed is time for sleep. And his body just shuts right down. And
I thought the moral of this page of the story was that Mama does the emotional labor on behalf of the whole family.
Papa does do the emotional labor when he wakes up and has had his cup of coffee and gets home from work and has a little time to rest.
All right, let's move on.
No, but Mama is very worried about it. And we see here that Papa is kind of maybe, well, neither of them are really approaching this thing in a constructive way.
Right, because Mama reviews what they've been doing, that they've tried lecturing, it doesn't work, they've tried nagging, which is apparently distinct from lecturing, and that doesn't work, and then having Papa yell at them doesn't work.
Well, it seems like lecturing results in the kids being bored. Nagging results in the kids being like, get a load of this. And then Papa talking to them results in them being afraid.
Yeah, and so then Mama realizes that they need to learn to be less selfish by helping other people. I like the focus of this book on helping Ms. McGriz. I don't actually think that's the same thing as learning to be less selfish. Because to me, learning to be less selfish, the examples they give in the beginning are you see a thing and you want the best thing for yourself all the time. You can want the best stuff for yourself and still go and be a nice person and help other people in your spare time. I don't think it's exactly the same thing they're trying to teach, but I still think it's a good thing.
Right, because we don't get examples in the beginning of brother and sister disregarding others in need. Like if brother and sister...
they're not callous.
Right. If brother and sister had like seen someone like hurt themselves or something and just walked on and mother had been like, huh.
Well, or if mother was like, you know, hey, can you take out the recycling? And they're like, I'm busy playing, you know.
Right.
It's not. So anyway, to me, this isn't like directly threading that through. That's okay. I'm not going
to. Yeah. I think what they're trying to say is brother and sister are good kids. They're just a little thoughtless sometimes. Or they expend a lot of their energy towards like making themselves happy. Maybe.
Well, and the other thing is maybe the self-centeredness, you know, it does, thinking of someone else does get you past that.
Well, and I also like Mama's answer, which is, you know, you learn by doing things. So maybe you just got to make your kids do things that are nice for other people and sort of exercise that muscle.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It seems a little manipulative, but also like, that's kind of true. Like,
well, she doesn't know. She just goes to bed thinking, I need to get the kids to help someone else, and they need to learn by doing. And then there's this little narrator voice that seems very like sort of folksy, like Pepperidge Farm kind of thing. The questions of who, when, and where the kids will learn to help others went unanswered as Mama drifted off to sleep. As it happens, those questions would soon be answered. Like, it's just very, I don't know, it feels like a, like, the narrator on, like, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or something like that.
It's welcome, though, because sometimes
it's cute.
Sometimes narration gets a little, like,
dry,
and this is, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so then they bump into their neighbor, like I said, shopping on her own at the grocery store, and back to the picture of our neighbor here, she's got a mixture of stuff in her grocery cart. Like she's got fresh produce and bread. So those are other, to me, signs that she's dressed really nicely.
Yeah.
One thing I did also relate to was, it's kind of subtle, in the picture, she's dressed up more than the other people. And that could be a generational thing, but I also know a lot of people that, you know, if you're, say, I'm going to guess she's maybe in her 80s, 70s. I don't think she's like 90. She's not old.
Right.
But this is probably her event for the weekend.
Oh, I see.
Is going out shopping. She is aware of the fact that she needs to make sure she's put together. But also, it's like a thing you're going out to do. It could be generational. It just like, you know, if you leave the house, you don't leave in your leggings like I would or something, right? You know, but also, I just thought that was nice. Like, she's wearing a hat with a flower in it. And she's got a purse. And she's got a little jackety thing. I think it's nice. That also shows you she's also doing well in my mind. She's got the ability to get herself put together. And right behind her is a big bulletin board of community notices. And I think that also shows some nice things about the neighborhood.
I see that.
Yeah. Right by where the kids are looking at the big rack of videos.
So I mentioned this last night, which is, this really dates this book, which is the kids are looking for videos to rent at the supermarket.
In boxes.
Which is something that I used to do when I was a kid. I'd go to the grocery store with my mom, and I immediately run to the video section, which was substantial. Probably about the size of our living room. Just rows and rows, like tightly packed together of videos. And
we didn't have that. Go to Blockbuster.
This is pre-Blockbuster. This was before we had video stores everywhere.
Oh, what?
Like, we had one video place called Premier Video, which was mostly Beta. And then Randall's grocery store had a huge video section, and every other weekend when it was big grocery shopping night, my mother would get her paycheck and we'd go big grocery shopping. Then I would run off to the video. And sometimes my sister was there and we'd both go off. We'd get to get two videos.
Whoa.
And then we would watch those things over and over again all weekend, which was a blast. And my dad wouldn't be there that night because he was on the EMS. And so he was riding the ambulance on Friday nights. That's my little life story. But I can relate to this picture, and it's very
That's
charming.
Sweet. Yeah.
But the kids are a little bit wary of Ms. McGriz.
Yeah, she's even older than Gramps and Gran.
Right.
And she has a crookedy cane, and once their ball went in her yard, and they never apologized. Which also makes me think she must be their next-door neighbor?
In this book, she sure is. All of a sudden, Ms. McGriz is just beyond the hedge.
Like, haven't they already named next-door neighbors?
Well, Lizzie Bruin lives down the street from them.
Oh, down the street.
Lizzie Bruin lives far enough away that it, like, sister has to run over to her house, and, like, but Ms. McGriz has never really geographically been placed in the book series, and now all of a sudden she is right next door.
Like, right next door.
Yeah. Again, the geography of Bear Country is...
Well, and then now thinking about that, so then on the next page, Mama's like, where are you going? And she says, I'm going to the bus stop. And the bus goes right by my house. And Mama says, so does our car. Well, yeah, if there's actually your literal next door neighbor, I would hope you would be like, let me give you a ride home. Yeah. I thought that was kind of a kind thing. But now that I'm understanding this, well, that's a kind of the minimal level of neighborliness.
Right. Mama kind of takes charge of Ms. McGriz's like situation here. And part of me is like, what if Ms. McGriz looks forward to that bus trip? Like, what if she has, like, friends on the bus line who she sees all the time, but now she's like, oh, I guess I'm...
Yeah.
I guess you changed my...
I think it's probably pretty safe to say most people aren't looking forward to being on the bus.
It's Bear Country bus. It's probably pretty friendly.
That's true, but I don't know. So then, you know, she has... Mama has the kids put all this stuff in the... Oh, I was confused by who was who. It's Mama who's all dressed up.
Yeah, I was wondering what you were talking about.
Mama was wearing the...
No, kind Mama of, Mama oh. has her hat with the flower in it. Ms. McGriz is wearing...
Trademark Bernstein schmata.
Yeah, she's wearing a schmata. And on her head, she's got one, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird. I'm not used to seeing Mama dressed up.
Yeah, Mama is wearing a purple...
Why is Mama dressed up to go to the grocery store?
A purple
store?
Jacket, a traveling hat.
Wow, this is still Stan and Jan, right?
Oh, yeah.
They weren't tired of the dots yet. What's going on?
It's her traveling clothes.
Wow, Mom, it's a grocery store?
Maybe it's generational for Mama.
Maybe it is.
Or maybe Mama's just feeling cold. Maybe Mama's like, you know that grocery store is always cold, especially when you're in the frozen
That's funny.
Aisle.
So that shows you that these bears' faces are hard to show age, because I thought she was supposed to be in her 80s. That's pretty funny.
No, they if you look at Ms. McGriz's face, they do the wrinkles all over it when you get close-ups in the Roadster.
I guess we're not there yet.
They show that age. She's one of the few bears who like.
Oh, I see that.
She gets the toothless mouth.
She does.
But yeah, so it is Ms. McGriz pushing her little cart. I like the detail of
yep,
her little shopping
I like that
cart.
Too.
Those little collapsible yeah. carts you see people with. So yeah, so the kids help her get the groceries into the Roadster's trunk, which I also like that Mama doesn't say, "Kids, would you help Ms. McGriz?" No, she's like, "Kids, put her stuff in the trunk." Like, there's no request from the children. She just tells them to do it.
Yeah, you can't opt out of this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they show them driving home. They prominently feature all the seat belts.
Yes.
Including, you know, the back seat and the front seat both. And then I thought this was actually pretty cool. Ms. McGriz just comes out and asks for help with something. Mm. And so Mama is like, ooh, this is great because I've been looking for something.
Why is it cool that Ms. McGriz
It's cool just because asked it. In my experience, probably the biggest reason that people who are older who are wanting to live at home that it doesn't end up going well is they have a hard time deciding that they need some help.
Mm.
And often then someone else comes and decides they should get help and then they say, nah, and then it kind of gets into a whole thing. And in this case, she's like, you know what? I have something I need help with. So first of all, she's just decided that on her own. Like, that's a thing. Then she goes out and just, like, asks someone. And then she also offers to pay them. Well, I know a lot of people who either financially can't, or just it's just hard for them to decide that that's how they're going to start using their money. And I think that also might be a you know, I think in the world of neighborliness, like mama ends up saying, no, you're not going to pay them. They're just going to help. But, you know, I think to have a more transactional society where it's like, I need some help with stuff, I'll pay someone. That's huge for being able to keep having things go well in your life. Like one day, if she does need help with the laundry, she'd probably be like, huh, I need help. Let me see if I can hire someone, which isn't probably the way she grew up. I'm sure she didn't grow up with like maids who did her laundry for her, you know? And so making that transition is a big deal for an older
mama
person.
Mama makes it easy for her to make that transition. Like mama kind of helps set it up as well. Like, and I think mama does a good job at that. Like by demonstrating, here are two kids who will help.
Yep.
And you are my neighbor and I'm offering help.
Yes.
Like, I think it's not just on the senior's part. It's also like on the community's part to say, like, we are a community.
Yeah. She also, Ms. McGriz, was able to think of one defined thing. I need help cleaning up my attic. It wasn't like, I need help. I don't even know what I need help with. Right. You know what I mean? Like she had a thing in mind. So, and she was like kind of ready to go with it. Like she didn't wake up that morning and say, I hope I'll find someone to clean my attic today.
Right.
So I thought that was pretty terrific. All of it was pretty great.
The Cubs do not think it's pretty terrific. In fact, they've been drawn with faces that actually reflect the terror they feel at missing out on their weekend. Having to spend it on Saturday at Ms. McGriz's house.
Yeah, it's like if the Scream was redone with bears.
Yes, it is the patented staring at the reader shocked face that you rarely see, but it does pop up from time to time. Brother and sister are just dumbstruck at the fact that they're going to have to give up their valuable time playing video games with Cousin Fred. Listening to records with Lizzie, which is a huge deal. Again, this book was written in 1998. But it was not written by kids in the era.
You rent videos, you play video games, and you listen to records.
Yes, this is what kids do. I mean, the video game, sure. But and also soccer. What about soccer? We don't know what about soccer. But they are not happy with having to give up their Saturday.
That's interesting about the soccer, because if they were on a team or something, then that's actually interesting on Mama's part, because that's like a group commitment.
Right.
You know, but we are not going to go there.
Yeah, and Mama also is the soccer coach. So maybe she has a little say in when.
Maybe it all goes back to that soccer ball karma that they didn't get out of her yard.
Right.
Yeah.
What about soccer? Ms. McGriz says, I still have your ball.
Right.
So they take their complaints to Papa, who thinks it's a.
Well, so before we go there, so the other thing that is cool that Mama does is it's not that vague, oh yeah, we'd love to help you, just let us know, you know, like sometime, you know, and then that never happens. It's like, no, like, so Ms. McGriz offers a specific thing she needs help with, and then Mama counters with, great, here's a date and people who will do it. And so they've like kind of sealed the deal there. And I think that as neighbors, that's something we often don't do, you know. It's just sort of like, oh, you know, sometime when you get a chance, maybe you could help me with, like, we've done that with neighbors, like, we have this thing we want that you'd understand how to fix. Oh yeah, sure, I'm happy to. And then it sort of just fizzles and dissolves into the ether. And so Mom is good at like nailing it down and turning it into reality. And then the kids are sort of the
right. Mom is not volunteering her time, but
That's not the point.
Right. The point is that the kids are going to learn something from
this. Exactly. I actually like that. She doesn't say, we'll all come over. She sends the kids on their own. I mean, think about that. These kids are not very old. We don't do that.
Right.
We don't say, like, we've got an older kid in the house, too. We don't just say, like, hey, you're going to go do this thing. Go head over at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Go walk yourself over to such and such person and help them.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Well, the kids don't think it's great.
Nope.
And Papa thinks it is great.
Yeah, they seem a little shocked. They sort of thought that he would be their audience that would be a little more sympathetic. Yeah. Instead, they say something like, it turned out he was even more enthusiastic about the idea than Mama was. You can see they're just totally dismayed.
We know that if Papa had been volunteered for the job, he would have the same reaction the Cubs do. We also know that Papa is probably like, great, they get out of the house on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, and the one thing I don't like, he says, I think it's grand of you to volunteer to help poor old Ms. McGriz clean her. She's not poor old Ms. McGriz. She just needs some help.
Yeah, and they're like, we didn't volunteer.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
And then he's like, even if you didn't volunteer, it's a wonderful thing you're doing. I think you may find it interesting. You never know what you might find in an old lady's attic. And this is true. At the same time, it's slightly undercutting. Like, no, you're just helping her.
Right.
Even if it's boring all day and dusty and you're sneezing and you got to take home and wash all that cobweb off of you. That's not the point. Isn't that you're like, ooh, maybe there is something in it for me.
Yeah. And this is where I think the book starts slip sliding a little bit away from its intended message.
This reminded me of a lot of, we get a lot of PJ Library books that talk about mitzvahs.
Yes.
Right. And in many of them, like the girl helps, finds a lost doll that she loves and really wants to keep and returns it. She finds the owner. But then in the end, her grandma buys her a doll that looks just like it. Like, no, that's not the point.
Right.
The point is that you do the good thing.
Yes, I've noticed that in a lot of children's books as well. There are several children's books that play on the story of the gift of the Magi, which is we've both given up something to get you something. Oh, well, we love each other. But in all the children's versions of it, at the end, they get their things back.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, look, someone saw what we did and they gave us all of our stuff back. And now we have everything we wanted. And I'm like, that really undercuts the whole notion of doing something selfless.
Right.
And I think it's because we want to see, especially in these like sort of series books with like famous characters, we want the publishers maybe even want to see those characters rewarded at mm-hmm. the end. Like they come out on top mm-hmm. somehow, like, because that's what the kids like. They like to see their friend, like their favorite characters, like get something at the end.
When you want to reinforce it's not like sort of painful.
Right. But I think that there might be, well, we'll get to it, but better ways than
yes.
how they
yes.
illustrate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Yep.
So up to the attic on rickety old stairs they go.
Yeah, I like this. And another thing I like, where I think Ms. McGriz is being a model elder in the community, is she is better than I am at saying, I've got a lot of stuff. I don't need all of it. I'm going to get rid of some of it. I mean, her help, I was actually surprised by this. Her help is because she needs just to sit there and tell the kids, I'm going to keep this, I'm not going to keep that. And the kids' job is just to put it in one box or the other. She is not having any emotional attachment. Her husband has died. She's got like her late husband's hobby of building ships in a bottle. And she's like, yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Give it away. Or not even give it away. She's saying, I didn't love this either. They end up doing something differently, but it was called throwaways, the one box. Throwaways and keepers.
Yeah.
Like, she's just like, I'm just going through my stuff. Keep, toss, 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 keep. Like, I was like, whoa, we should all be this good.
The thing that made me, so there's this one moment in this, one little aspect of this picture, this spread that always made me kind of sad. First of all, this attic is like the size of a football field. If you look at the main picture, it is
enormous. The footprint of her house, when you see it where they had the soccer ball and her tulips, it looks like this very, very small like cottage.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's like this expansive.
I assume that cottage is actually just the entryway.
Ah, there you go.
But in any case, the one thing that always makes me kind of sad when I see it is they're listing all the things, and you see them when they list them. But it says there's a dressmaker's dummy with half a dress mm-hmm. pinned to mm-hmm. it. And that always makes me sad because I'm like, at some point, Ms. McGriz was like halfway through making a dress. And she was like, I'm not going to finish this dress. And then she put it up in the attic. And that was the last time she ever built a dress. That was like the middle of her life. I don't know. It makes me sad. Like at some point in her life, she decided I'm done making clothes. And then she put it away forever. And now it just sits gathering dust. That's like my Ms. McGriz like sadness next to her husband's ship in a bottle hobby. And apparently a barrel full of old
fluorescent light bulbs,
which is amazing because no one ever knows what to do with old fluorescent light bulbs.
Yeah, it's highly relatable.
And then they find, to me, the pièce de résistance in the attic, which is an old cathedral radio. Now, I tried to find online this actual radio because traditionally they're based on real things. And these were in the 1930s. This was a style, this sort of like wooden radio that they're called cathedral radios. And they look like little churches. I couldn't find one that looked exactly like this with the spires on the corners. But it's definitely a thing. But that also means that this radio was acquired sometime in the 1930s.
The time is so vague here, though. She also has one of those turntables with the giant,
horn.
What to call it. Yeah, that I think of as being, like, from the dawn of time. Like, I don't understand.
I think that those things still existed around, like, the 20s, 30s.
Okay, but 40. I'm just confused. I mean, it's so unclear as to when this is supposed to take place in the first place with records and video games.
Well, if we're putting it in the late 90s, and Ms. McGriz is...
Is it in the late 90s? That's, I guess, what I'm like, the Roadster doesn't look like any car I ever saw.
Because that is
the
their
90s.
Branded car. they will never change that car because that is what they're known for. But the hints of the old record player, the radio... going on into a couple of things coming up, we'll take a look at the other stuff coming up. So the old radio works, and you've got this wonderful little passage which says, as the Cubs stood listening to rock music coming out of a radio that looked like a cathedral, they had the funniest feeling about how time works. It went back into the past and forward into the future. But now it was the present, and they had work to do. And I was like,
Papa was right. Ms. McGrizak was kind of interesting.
But I was like, what a strange little, like.
I loved that. I was going to bring that up if you didn't. That's to me that same thing where the narrator is very present in this book. Yeah. And that's my favorite. Just this little aside. They have the funniest feeling about time, how time works. I love that. Yeah. And then it zips it right back in and goes to the, oh, yeah, it is interesting here. And. Like I said before, I do appreciate that you should go in with an open mind and you might see fun and interest in places you didn't expect outside of your regular Saturday routine.
Yeah.
But then there's a part of me that's a little bummed where it's, you know, it's not about you having fun. It's about you helping Ms. McGriz.
Well, this is where they decide to help Ms. McGriz by organizing her attic into things to throw away and things to keep. And they're like, you sit right down there. Yep. And we'll bring things to you, and you tell us what to toss.
She
and what
says
to
either
keep
it or chuck it.
Yep.
And we see in the picture, we see Brother Bear holding all the fluorescent light bulbs. I'm like, oh, please dispose of those safely.
Well, what? I don't think those are fluorescent light bulbs.
You don't?
Because
do you
if you
are?
Look at them, they look like shades.
Oh, light shades.
Because those are bent. Like the light bulbs are definitely bulbs because they have the little like ends on them.
Oh, they're different.
And these are like window shades because one's bent and you can actually see the flap of shade hanging down in the background. And I certainly
You're
can
right.
relate to having like old window shades just laying around. Like, what do you do with them? But then Sister makes an interesting discovery.
Mm-hmm. Just before lunch. They haven't been at this for a while.
Yeah. She says, what is this, Miss McGriz? It looks like a really old Barbie doll. A really, really old Barbie doll. And Ms. McGriz says, that's what it is. It's the original Barbie I had when I was a cub.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Yep. And then Brother finds an old Babe Bruin, who I assume is the avatar for Babe Ruth in the Bear universe, rookie card. And Ms. McGriz is like, yep, my late husband was a big Babe Bruin fan. So table those, because those come back later.
Yeah, which you instantly know is going to happen.
Right.
Also, because we were like 5 pages from the end of the book.
Uh-huh. Yes, we are nearly done. So the Cubs get an idea. Probably the easiest idea for anyone to handle. A yard sale. This is one of the aspects of the book that I find very... have you ever done a yard sale or a garage
sale?
No,
you have?
What?
You have?
When I was very young.
Because I do know people who just slap them together.
Really? Because I've always thought of them as extraordinarily difficult. Like, they require a lot of time and energy.
Yeah.
But the kid's idea is for Ms. McGriz to have a yard sale because she has a lot of cool old stuff that they don't want her to just throw away.
Yeah, that did. I did. Was a little bit appalled. Like, I was actually guessing she would maybe donate it.
Donate it, yeah.
Yeah.
But they decided to make her a little extra money. And, you know.
A little extra money.
What senior doesn't need a little extra money? And so they decide to set up this yard sale, and they do.
The very next
Saturday. And you can see her house in the background, finally.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that was just the entryway.
It is a much larger cottage.
So you can also see another house next to them. Is that the Bears?
That is the Bears treehouse.
They are... So in this book, they are about as close next door as we are to our neighbors in the city here, where you can like see into their house. If you're
yes.
There. Yeah, that's pretty funny because in other books, I've always thought that they had a yard, like a substantial yard.
Right.
Yeah.
They may in the other direction.
Yeah, right.
I do love that when you see all the stuff for sale, you see like the radio is for sale, the ship and the bottles for sale.
I know.
Like, so long, Mr. McGriz. But also, she has what it seems to be a cookie jar shaped like Mama Bear.
Oh, she does.
It's an official Berenstain Bears brand Mama Bear cookie jar.
And which, some weird mug or pitcher or something that has a bear's face
yes,
on it.
Yes, that is a, I know exactly what that is. That is like, it's like a stein.
Oh.
That is shaped like a person's head with like a tri-corner hat. And the hat is the pouring part. Maybe like a pitcher.
Like kind of like a Paul Revere kind of thing?
Yes, yes. Like
that's
a pitcher
creepy.
Or a, but it's a legit thing. And to me, that also like is a very nice detail that shows like she is from a certain era. Also, if she played with an original Barbie doll as a child, Barbie, if it's anything like Barbie, came out in the late 50s.
Oh,
so that's unusual
because she's supposed to be older than Gramps and Grandma,
right? So that means that in the Bear universe the Barbie doll was invented probably in the 20s or late 20s early 30s. Which also means that the Art Deco movement and the modernist movement, and the, especially as far as like illustration goes, which is what the original Barbie was based on, a French doll that was like a adult, based on adult illustrations, happened many decades earlier. Like we're being forced back into time here. The timeline is a much stranger in Bear World.
You are, because you're the only person who's thought about that.
But it's true. You change one thing, you've changed everything. So Barbie has apparently existed because the Babe Ruth thing kind of makes sense. If Mr. McGriz was a collector, he probably found these things, because that would have been his rookie card, would have been like 1919 or so. Also, here's the thing. An original Barbie doll from that era used, I mean, probably worth about $5,000-$6,000. That Babe Ruth rookie card, $80,000 to $100,000.
What?
I say 40 to 80, up to 100,000 if it's in mint. Probably not in mint condition because it was in an old shoebox. $40,000 to $80,000, let's say.
That's probably what she's living on in a year. More than that.
Also,
then
there were more cards in that box, so she's sitting on a gold mine.
She
here.
Was till she sold them all.
She
for
was until she sold
it.
Garage. The antique radio alone will pull you in about $100, probably.
Yeah,
it works.
She didn't need as much a garage sale as like a, I don't know, some sort of specialized. Like if she had died, it would have been an estate sale.
Right.
But
right.
For, I don't know what they do for people who are alive. But yeah, she needed eBay, but this wasn't around yet.
Well, it's fortunate that this is one of the storybooks and that Ralph Ripoff is not involved, because he would have swindled her out of those cards.
Well, she basically swindled herself.
She has. Oh, I see more than, there's more than one ship in the bottle,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's one in the
yep.
background.
Yeah.
Also, have you ever known anyone who made ships in bottles?
No.
Because that's a thing in Bear Country.
Yeah,
old people love their ships in bottles.
Yeah.
Yep. It requires a steady hand.
Yep.
So
she did not sell the dressmaker's dummy that we can at least see in this picture. So maybe she's decided she needs to.
She's gonna finish that dress.
Revitalize, yeah.
Yep, yep. And it says that Ms. McGriz really wants to pay them, but Mama won't hear of it. However, they are allowed to accept gifts. And what are their gifts?
Yeah. So instead of like giving them each a nice $10 bill for their help on those two Saturdays, which is probably what she would have done, she gives Sister the Barbie and Brother the Babe Croon rookie card.
Here
that I sorely hope they have put away so that they can fund their college education.
I was going to say, thanks for the afternoon of help, kids. Here's college.
Yeah.
Like, or at least, brother, here's college.
Yeah.
Sister, here's like, I don't know, your first, like, a few, here's your books for the first
yeah,
couple
of years.
Instead,
they're like, great, we're going to play with these. And they're like ripped by the end of the weekend.
Right. Well, I know that Brother will be smart enough to put the card away. Like, he is aware. Because Sister says wow when she gets the Barbie doll. Brother says double wow.
Yeah, I don't want to overdo it because this is a kid's book, but really, this is where the parents should have stepped in and been like,
yeah,
we can't do this. You need this money. This isn't an appropriate, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, and again, this is where I said like the book kind of undercuts its message a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, totally.
Because
they're more than rewarded.
Even if it had been just a comic book, just some random, like, oh, you have a bunch of old comics? Here, have one of these comics you like. Or here's just a bunch of old dolls. Hey, sister, you like this old doll? Fine. Like, maybe even if they're not worth anything. The fact that in the end, they are rewarded with something cool, it's kind of like, it was supposed to have been its own reward. Like, you would think the Cubs would be like, wow, it was really nice to help Ms. McGriz.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. They don't say anything about that.
Like, Freddy's like, I thought we were going to play video games. And Brother's like, we can play video games anytime, but we helped out a neighbor. And that was its own, like...
Yeah, or, you know, I got to hear a lot of really neat stories about what she and her husband used to do, and that was actually kind of neat.
Right.
Like, I got to know her a little better, and...
Yeah.
I learned that funny thing about time.
We kind of went through that with the Berenstain Bears, the week at Grandma's, which is when the Cubs have to visit their...
Have to.
Grandparents. Well, they're not looking forward to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know.
And they end up enjoying it. So we kind of got that message, but...
Yeah, once is enough.
Yeah. This explicitly starts off by saying, we want the kids to learn to only think, to think of others before themselves.
And to stop being so focused on stuff.
Right. And then in the end, they get some stuff.
They're like, great stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Great stuff.
So I've learned that helping others is a great means to getting more stuff.
Yep. You do it. You don't complain. You do it sincerely enough. They'll probably give you something.
Which is actually kind of true, but...
Yeah,
it's same thing. It's like what you would hopefully also be learning is, oh, one day someone will help me, and maybe to thank them, I'll, you know, give them a little something or something like that. But instead, the kids, because they're kids, aren't taking that away from it either.
Right. Well, they don't need to. They're $40,000 richer.
Yeah, it's not great.
They're doing great. I don't know. Maybe in Bear Country, Babe Bruin was a player from like 10 years ago, and... No one cares. Maybe these aren't worth anything in Bear Country. Who knows? But in my headcanon, they are. And the kids just made off like... Or maybe that Barbie doll's in terrible shape. It was a child's doll. So maybe it's only worth a few $100s. I don't know. It's certainly not in its original black and white striped swimsuit, which is what Barbie was originally sold in. So who knows? Who knows? Who knows? But... At the end of the day, at the end of the book, how do you think it did as far as like messaging and demonstrating, you know, like what we can do as a community, like how helping seniors out, helping people in the community out?
That's a weird question a little bit, because the book is supposed to be about, it's so weird. So the book is called Lend a Helping Hand. The premise, as far as Mother explains it, is teaching the kids to think of others and not to always want the best thing for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there's a lot of really interesting sort of probably unintentional commentary about older people living alone and on their own in the community, but it's all just like coincidental that this happens to be in there. Do you know what I mean? I actually think it does pretty much, thinking about it from this, which is actually pretty much the way a lot of things work when we when I was trying to fund a program to help seniors, I kept having to they kept wanting to be like, well, are you going to get kids involved? I'm like, no, we're actually trying to fund the seniors. Well, are the kids going to help the seniors? Well, maybe. Will you give me money then? Yeah. Like, what? Can we? So anyway, maybe that's just the way it is. But anyway, I think it paints a pretty cool picture of this person. I keep coming back to, like, it's a little weird that if she's truly their next door neighbor, she's not integrated into the fabric of the community or their life, or you would already know her
right
by now, and it would just be a regular thing. But, you know, it's a book, and they have to do a little narrative dance and tell a story and stuff. So I think they mostly did really well. I think she's pretty neat. You know, at first they think she's got a weird cane and whatever, and then they kind of get past that as they get to know her.
Right. And it avoids, I mean, again, we've already seen the Berenstain Bears book about the old lady is actually a witch.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a Berenstain Bears book called The Berenstain Bears Think of Those in Need. And it's about cleaning out the house and getting rid of stuff and all.
Like, their house?
Yes, their own house. And like donating their own material goods to people who are in need. So, and actually, Lend a Helping Hand and Think of Those in Need are two books I always conflate with one another because they both involve cleaning out attics.
Yeah. One thing I do like about this is she is in the same social strata that they are. On the cover is a picture of her house and her front yard, and she's got a bird feeder with a bird at it and a really nice little flower thingy growing by her front door. Like, she's doing fine, like, as far as just, like, you know, I don't know anything about her economics, but, like, you know, her house is put together.
There's the cat. Yeah. She shows up once an episode.
The cat.
Yeah. She scream. She walks through and scream.
So anyway, so I like that. They're not helping her because she's like sort of quote unquote beneath them. She's just a person who needs some help.
Also, I think the illustration on the cover does a better job at showing what she's wearing at the supermarket, which it looks to me, and actually a nice black dress.
That's true. Yeah.
Because she's got like it looks like she's got a little pendant at her neck.
Yeah.
Like a little,
and a little collar.
Yeah. Has a nice white collar. Maybe she's never removed her mourning.
Oh.
Maybe she's just... Maybe that's the thing.
Well, you know, we don't die. We don't know. Maybe he died like 2 months ago or something. I mean, we don't actually know. Like, because that's a hard transition.
Yeah.
Like going from being in a couple for often decades and decades to living alone. I mean, when I worked in the programs with seniors, most of the women, of course, were the people who ended up living alone. Most of them had never lived alone in their whole life. Because you didn't, at that time, you didn't grow up and move out and then later get married. You moved out when you got married.
Yeah.
And that was hard. And then, you know, there was all kinds of things that your husband used to do that you just never even did. I knew people who had never written a check, you know, because they'd never lived on their own and they just didn't know how to do stuff. And vice versa, you know, guys who would be like, I don't know how to cook anything, you know. I mean, so that's really a hard transition. I didn't have that sense from her. I had the sense more that, you know, like it didn't seem like her husband had just passed away.
No.
But yeah, I think she's doing great. She seemed to be doing great.
Well, good for Ms. McGriz. Mm-hmm. So this is the point in the show where I ask, is the Berenstain Bears Lend a Helping Hand the kind of book you would recommend parents have on their Berenstain Bears bookshelf?
Sure. I'd say sure.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't blow me away, but there's certainly nothing negative in it. There's a lot of good things in it. I think it's just, I think it's just what I said the last time you had me. I think it's a little bit muddled thematically. That I think the last time I can't remember what book it was, but it ended, I was like, it's telling a story. It's just not telling a story. It's telling you it's going to tell.
Right.
And I think that's a little bit of this one, too. Like, again, the title and Mama's present premise and what actually happens are like three different things that are all good. They're just not the same. Like, right. Who edits these? Anyone? I don't know.
Well, I agree. I think it's, you know, as is typical with a lot of these first time books, it loses its path a little bit. But this one at least doesn't offer anything destructive or like counter like to what. You know, it doesn't offer any advice that might actually hinder a child's development.
And I do give it a couple extra points for the odd narrator voice that I enjoyed.
it's charming. It's none of the spreads tend to blow me away like some of the books do, but it's very nicely illustrated. And again, it is available new as a paperback book under their Berenstain Bears Classics, or it is available digitally. Wherever you buy digital books. So, it's one of the books now that preserves the original layout of all the pages. So you get to see what the artists intended in the layout. And that is it for the Berenstain Bears Lend a Helping Hand. Alana, thank you so much for joining me at the first show in the new year.
Woo, happy new year.
Thanks, happy new year to you. Happy new year to all my listeners. If you're looking for this show, please go to berensteinbearcast.wordpress.com or go on over to patreon.com/deepinbearcountry and throw a few dollars my way. And if you are a Patreon subscriber, you are going to get a bonus episode about the Berenstain Bears Lend a Helping Hand Nelvana PBS 2003 TV episode featuring young Michael Cera as the voice of Brother Bear. How does it stack up? Is it like the book? Is it not? Who knows? You're going to have to listen to the episode to find out. And Alana's going to be there with me, aren't you?
I sure am.
We'll be back with more Berenstain Bears action. We'll have more guests. We'll be talking about more topics. And I will see all of you next time deep in Bear Country.